Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a book, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when live and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis. This is MJ Network. MJ after my sister, Marsha Joyce. And we have the author of African Vengeance. Steve Breaker is here, and this is absolutely fantastic. So let me read you part of the back cover so that you're going to all want to get this when I'm done reading it. It takes place on the Kenyan coast. William Brody longs for a quiet life. Well, poor guy's not going to get one. Although he's still recovering from a recent bout of malaria, the former Special Services Major agrees to help some locals retrieve cargo lost in the ocean depths. I'm not going to tell you more, but this is interesting because this book is told in three parts. And I hope all my questions are in three parts. Good morning. How are you? Where are you calling in from?
Good morning. How are you? I'm calling from Kenya in East Africa. Good.
Oh, really? Oh, this is exciting.
Yes, it's 5 o'clock in the evening here.
Oh, well, I didn't even realize that. I had no idea because I don't know where everybody is when they're here. No wonder you named the book after that. So how did you decide? The first scenes really got me, let me tell you. It took me for a while to read this, but I think I've got it in. I think I have too many questions, but we'll see. Part one, you created scenes with removing precious gold ore. How did you do that, and how did you create the gold? That was exciting.
The gold, I was very lucky. My brother, Daniel, is a geologist, and I was hunting around looking for storylines, and I was actually in the town where the story takes place, Tanga in Tanzania, and I noticed that there were still shops in the town that looked at ore and measured to see what quality of ore was in the stones, and I followed it up with my brother, and we found that there's a large amount of greenstone in that area, which holds quite a lot of precious metal, and so it kind of gave me a hook for the beginning of the story. Authors only need sort of a little hook to get going.
It's original, I'll tell you that. I won't tell you how many books I've read, and this is like got me. So, oh my God!
Oh, good. I'm glad.
I mean, usually when a book is like close to 700 pages, I go like, oh, my God, why are they doing this to me? But you know what? I literally read it in 2 days. Usually I read it in one, but I wanted to make sure that I got it. So this is the other thing that got me. Why did they mistreat the workers, and who are the people involved?
In that part of the book, the setting is the beginning of the First World War, so the early 1800s. And at that point in time, Tanzania was called Tanganyika and was a colonial power from the Germans. Now, the Germans, like all colonial powers, weren't very nice to the local population. They treated them almost like subhuman at that time. And so I'd read a lot up on the area. And as I said, I live in Kenya anyway, so I've studied the history. And they were treated in a very terrible way. And I wanted to point that out because we get a lot of information about, you know, how the colonial things helped the countries and this and that. But you've got to show the other side of the story as well.
You know something, I so agree with you because so many times we don't get the other side of the story. And that's not fair either. And they don't even get
exactly
both sides of the people. Yeah, that bothers me. Bothers me with a lot of things that I listen to about in the news lately, too. So tell us about Albrecht and his role. What was he supposed to do And how did you create the battle? I was getting nervous. This is really like you could actually feel things happening.
Yes, there's several things happening there. I had to get the gold to be lost for my story. So I researched German submarines, and it was very interesting to find that they were being made and launched in the First World War, even though there was no sonar or anything. So when they went below the waves, they had to dead reckon where they were going with navigation, which must have been terrifying. So I introduced my German submarine, and the Corvette captain, Eric, is given the job by Kaiser Wilhelm, who was the Kaiser in the First World War, the boss of Germany during the First World War. And he had to drive his submarine all the way down to the colonial area of Tanganyika, past the British ports of Mombasa. So his part is to get there. And then the actual battle is a battle that actually happened. It's called the Battle of the Bees. And it actually happened between the British and the Germans. And it was very unusual in that it was a battle between two colonial powers. Normally when people went to war, they didn't mess with their colonial places. They left them alone. But in this instance, the British had decided they wanted to take over Tanzania. So there was a big battle called the Battle of the Bees, where both sides started their war and fighting. And strangely enough, they really upset a huge population of local bees. And the bees stung both sides. And so both sides retreated and left the town completely empty, which gave the time for the Germans to come back in and take it all back again. But it's on the internet. If you Google the Battle of the Bees, you'll find some really interesting information about it.
I did read the information, and every time they got stung, I've gotten stung by bees. Oh my God, that is so painful.
It's horrible, isn't it?
That, my arm blew up, and I didn't realize I was allergic to yellow jacks. So it's like, oh my God, on the way to the ER to get something, you just don't know.
Yeah,
it was like
you just
that's
don't
like
know.
Scary.
No, you can get anaphylactic shock. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even realize
scary.
It. I happened to put my hand down on something, go like, oh my God, what is that? So who is Eric, and why did they need him to take his U-boat on a mission that was dangerous? And who else was involved? We're almost done with part one.
Yes, well, Eric was the Corvette captain who bought the submarine, and he was told to collect the gold from the port, and he had to sneak in because the port was being blockaded by the British warship. So he managed to sneak in, and then he appears in Tanga Port, and then most of the gold is loaded onto the submarine, and then he has to try and make his escape. But as I said before, when a First World War submarine was underwater, they had no sonar, so they had to dead reckon in their direction and their depth and everything, which was incredibly difficult. So I can't say much more around that, or I'll give you a spoiler.
No, we can't tell everybody. This is really, this is one of those books that, oh my God. So what happens at first, and what role did how do you pronounce his name, Corvette Captain play? What did he do?
Well, he was in charge of the submarine. And he was supposed to pick up the gold, and he did pick up the gold from the wharf, and then he was in charge of trying to get it back to Germany. That was his main role in the book.
So I don't want to give away too much in part one. So what happened? They found, I was like, oh my God, look what they found at the bottom of the ocean. That was outrageous. Where did it wind up? I'm not going to say what it is.
The gold.
Because when you read it, like, you're going to say, oh, my God. So where did it wind up? What happened to it?
What happened to which particular thing?
The $10 million.
Is that in the first section?
Yeah.
In the
I don't know
submarine?
Why. don't know why I haven't in the book. So let's go to the second part. The guy that I really liked is Brody. What's his backstory? And I felt so bad for him because he was recuperating from malaria, but they weren't going to let him get better.
No, that's the problem with these heroes. They always have to find some more trouble.
I like this guy.
Brody is an ex special boat service colonel who spent a lot of time going on missions and working with the Royal Marines, the Navy Royal Marines, all over the world, fighting in different conflicts. Then one of his times when he's out working for the Navy, he has to go and arrest a man in Somalia, and then he goes into some terrible situations, which is in one of the earlier books, African Slaver. And from there, he gets very disillusioned, and he leaves the Army, the Royal Marines, and the Special Boat Service, and he decides he just wants a peaceful life, living on the coast of Africa, diving, swimming, spearfishing, drinking some beer, laying on the beach, living the dream. So that's where he comes from.
Well, then he sort of gets into a situation. Mm-hmm. And I wondered about this person. How does he meet Wana Jiku? How does he meet her? And who is her son and Gumbo? Gumbo? So
Gumbo,
how does he meet her?
They're my lovely African names. Wana Jiku is there from an earlier book. He meets her in a book called African Paradise. Mm-hmm. And they become friends in that book where she helps him get used to life in Africa. She's a young lady. She's a bit of a hustler. And she lives in a town called Matwapa, which is on the coast of Kenya. And that he met her and her family just through generally getting used to living. And he has a bit of an adventure with her in an earlier book. So I brought her back to this book because I thought she was such a wonderful character. She's a nice, strong African woman who's living, hustling as they do here, making her way through life and enjoying herself at the same time. Then Hassan is one of Brody's crew members. They're more of a friendship group than a crew. No one's really the captain. They each have their specialist duties. Hassan is the best man in the ocean. He's a pure Swahili. He comes from Pemba. And he's been living in boats since he was a few days old. Now, he's a very, very strict Muslim guy. He believes in all of the right things and, dressing properly and being good and being nice and being a pure, good Muslim. On the other hand, I have my friend Gumbao.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Gumbao is a bit of a free living person. He likes to drink. He likes to smoke. He likes to gamble. And in the town where I set a lot of this story, which is Matwapa, it's one of our frontier towns for people heading to Somalia and the Sudan. So it's quite a wild place with a lot of truck drivers stopping, and there's lots of bars and nightclubs and this kind of thing on the street. It's sort of a 24-hour town. So Gumbao, often when they come to a town, Gumbao gets lost in the town and ends up playing checkers, or he ends up in prison or whatever. You know, he's sort of one of those, he lives for today, shall we say.
I don't know. I like that was a good point, but I don't swim. I get nervous. Oh, forget it. Underwater? Never mind. Not me. I was lucky I ever learned to swim at all. So how did you describe the underwater scenes, and what research did you do into diving that made it so realistic? I felt like I was under the water with them.
Oh, I'm very happy you felt that. That's wonderful. I've been a scuba diver for in excess of 20 years now, showing my age there. I trained as a scuba diver and became a paddy open water scuba diver instructor. So I've dived along the coast of Kenya. I've done well over 1,000 dives with tourists and some commercial diving. And so I know the coasts, and I've dived and dived and dived. One thing I can talk about until your ears fall off is diving. So I was able to bring that into the story because I do love, I still dive now. I was diving last weekend. I still love to do it all the time. So I'm very lucky in the fact that I live in a place that has warm water and still some very beautiful coral reefs to dive on.
You know what I think? I don't think enough people know enough about Kenya and Africa. And they just hear what they hear on the news. But they don't get to appreciate it for what that really is. That's what bothers me. And as an educator, I mean, you try to broaden the horizons of kids, but today I don't think they're learning very much of anything with this horrible pandemic. It's really sad that they can't even
appreciate it. It is really sad. I try to bring that out in my books. I do try, and on my website, and I have a blog which describes African stories and things about Africa, because I agree with you. There's so much here to be seen and enjoyed, and so few people come to do that.
I know. They have this misconception about a lot of things, and it's really sad. But I know that. I'm glad you told me that, because my nephew loves to learn stuff about that, and he's 9 going on 17, I think. So tell us, he's his aunt's nephew, yep, that's it. Tell
Great.
Us about the Shukran and what Brody used it for.
Shukran in Swahili, in high Swahili, means thank you. We have two ways of saying thank you. One is asante, which everybody knows if they've watched the Lion King. And the other one is Shukran, which also means thank you. But it means in what we say a higher Swahili. Now, Brody was able to help some people in an earlier book. And because of the help that he gave them, they found an old dhow and they gave him the dhow for him to renovate. And so it's called Shukran because they were saying thank you to him for doing what he did in the book African Treasure or African Slaver. Now, Brody just likes to sail up and down the coast in his dhow. He looks after it like it's his firstborn child. He keeps it in beautiful condition, and he's always trying to make it better. And he sails along the coast here in East Africa from Tanzania all the way up to the edge of Somalia. And just really, he just enjoys himself. Basically, in African Vengeance, he's out diving and spearfishing. And just thoroughly enjoying the ocean, which is really all he's ever trying to do.
Well, the cover brings it to life. But I said the only thing I was missing were the pictures. I was like, can I have pictures of what you're doing? That would have been amazing. But the cover says it all. You could see it. You could see them on that boat. But
fantastic.
What are jumbo runes, and why did... he wanted to teach Wajika to swim, but she had to bring somebody with her. She couldn't come by herself. She had to bring a friend.
Jumba Ruins is an old Swahili settlement from the days when the Portuguese were along the coast of Kenya. It's still just some beautiful ruins in a forest on the beach, which is on the coast of Kenya here. And you can still visit the ruins. It's a national site run by the Kenya Museums. And there's still a working well there, and there's still some buildings there for you to visit. And you're very lucky you can walk through the ruins to the beach. And I put a restaurant on the beach because I wanted to have a reason for Brody to go and enjoy himself. So the Jumba Ruins is an actual historical site that exists, and if people come to Kenya, they can go and visit it. It's lovely. Now, Wanjiku is playing a bit of a game with Brody, learning to swim. She's trying to catch him because she's quite attracted to him. And so she's happy for him to pretend to teach her to swim. Really, it's her trying to get a date with Brody, because Brody is trying to be sort of on his own, just living in the ocean, no attachments, no connections, just living a free and easy life. And as a hustler, Wanjiko always wants to try and make a little bit extra out of everything. So she wants to bring her friend along to enjoy the day as well at Brody's expense. So really, she's just hustling him a little bit, as she always does. She's a born hustler, Wenji Ko, and she's always doing something
like
to make a few dollars here and there. Yes, yes, so do I, actually. She's grown into a wonderful character in African Vengeance.
She's not a mamby-pamby thing.
Yes, she
doesn't mind. So the other thing that
gets
me is that they had the fishing scenes, but how does the weather create fear? Sometimes just the weather itself can put some fear in you, and you wonder what's going to happen.
Absolutely. Here along the coast, we're on the very, very edge of the big swirling, what you call hurricanes down in America. And we call them typhoons down here, I think. Now, we're right on the edge of them. And the season that we're talking about here in African Vengeance was our cold season, where the winds blow up from the south, which is called the Kusi monsoon. Now, during that season, we can have some terrible weather blow up very, very quickly. And in a wooden boat with just a sail and an engine, it's not like a modern boat. It can't just drive straight through the waves. It can be sunk quite easily. So Brody it wants to go diving, and they do some fishing, and they catch a fish, but the weather catches them out, and then Hassan has to step in and do his best to try and save them.
So we're on to part three, people. This is the most exciting part. I got part three. We meet
right,
the pilot.
Okay, brilliant.
I don't know how I did this. And wait, but there's I don't even want to tell you how many questions I have for part three. We'll see. So we meet the pilot and a passenger whose goal is to deliver what is in several bags. So who is Tadisha, and what is the job? We're not going to say what's in the bag, but and why autopilot?
Well, he's one of these pilots in who flies between the islands in off the coast of East Africa, between Seychelles, Madagascar, and a few other islands down the coast. And what he does, basically, he's a little bit on the edge. He transfers stuff around because our coastline here has no coast guard. We have very little traffic controllers. You can drive out in your boat into the ocean and go to another country, which Brody does all the time. Or you can fly maybe contraband stuff in and out of the country. So he's tasked with trying to get the parcels from the Seychelles into Kenya, which is some over 1,000 miles, nautical miles. So he has to use his autopilot because he can't fly all that way. He'd be too tired. So once he's up in the sky and flying along, he flicks a switch and the aeroplane manages to stay on course as long as everything stays the same. In his case, the weather changes.
So what does the passenger tell him, and how does the storm take it away? And explain how you create those scenes. Like I said, the storm was like, I wanted to crawl into something to get warm, and just not with all the winds and everything.
Those electric storms here are quite frightening. They're amazing sometimes. The passenger just tells him he's got to get to where he's got to go or sort of die trying, unfortunately, because the big bosses who paid for the airplane flight are very demanding people. Now, I took the storm just from information I read and Googled on electric storms around this area. And they can be very, very severe. So I really took that and just put my imagination into it. And then I read about several articles on how airplanes are damaged in storms and how they can how they can have problems. And I just took my imagination and let myself go.
That's amazing, because weather is so unpredictable and you can't control it. You don't know when it's going to happen. I mean, the other day I walked outside, the sun was shining, and all of a sudden I got soaked from the rain. I was like, how dare you, out of nowhere. I know. We've had some very strange weather. 2 days ago it was like 60, and right now it's minus something or other up in New York.
Oh, my Lord, I'm sorry for you.
Yeah, well, you know, it's cold, but you know what? It's okay. At least it's not snowing. That does help. So.
Okay.
Who is Jabali, and why is he blamed for what happened on the plane? And who is, I don't know, Mbiritsi? So, and why does he threaten Jabali?
Jabali works for Colonel Mbiritsi. Colonel Mbiritsi is my evil protagonist in the whole show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Jabali works for him. Jabali happens to be able to be quite good with computers.
Mm.
So he was employed by the colonel to ensure that they knew where these packages were at all times, because the colonel is also under threat from higher up in the food chain. So he places bugs on the parcels so he can track them with the GPS machine and make sure he knows where they are all the time. Now, Mbiritsi is not a very nice man, and he doesn't care about Jabali or Jabali's family. All he cares about is getting these parcels. So he threatens Jabali and tells him that he has to make sure that the parcels are delivered or his life or his family's life are on the line, which unfortunately, you know, there are bad people everywhere in the world.
Mm, that's scary. So how is he going to find the missing bags and suitcases? Because that's very vital. We won't tell them why, but yeah.
Exactly. And he's fretting a lot because his life is on the line here for the suitcases, and also his family's too, because Colonel Mbiritsi is an evil man. So he knows they're in the ocean, but he doesn't really understand the ocean very well because he's a city boy. He lives in Mombasa City. So he has to figure out ways to actually try and look in the ocean. And he finds his friend in Mombasa Old Town, a fisherman. And the fisherman tries to help him a little bit, but says to him, look, it's almost impossible to find something in the ocean once it's dropped. You know, it's very, very difficult because there are currents under the water and wind and waves, and then you can't see very far underwater because of the visibility. So it's very difficult to search. But Jabali is crying. He really needs to find these packages. So that brings in the next person, Bahati. Bahati is a diver in the port.
Sometimes the bad guys are interesting, though. Not always, but sometimes.
Yes.
So how does Brody get involved? I don't know if he should have. Why does he think he can help? And who is Bahati? He's risking his own life to do this, too.
Yes. Yes, Bahati helps him to look for the bags first, but they have no luck because it's almost impossible to find things underwater. But then they're in the bar where Wanjiko is, and Wanjiko overhears them, and she knows that Brody loves going in the ocean, and he has some fancy machines on his boat to see where the fish are and depth sounders to look under the water. So, again, in her normal hustle way, she thinks she can make a few dollars. And she introduces them, Jabali and Bahati, to Brody to try and help them find the suitcases.
That is amazing. But this book weighs more than I do every time I look through it. So,
my mother says that. She says she falls asleep and it falls on her
little
nose.
It's like the book weighs a lot, let me tell you. So who does Jabali ask for help first, and what happens? And then he meets Brody through, then he meets Brody through Wanjiko. And what deal does she make? She's cool.
Wanjiko's cool all the way through. She she wants to make a few hundred dollars. So she tells Jabali that, yeah, we can go out in the boat, and yes, I'll help you find your parcels, but it's going to cost you some money. And Brody doesn't know this because she says it all in Swahili, and Brody doesn't understand the language very well. So so she manages to make a deal to make quite a lot of money for Kenya by her and her friend Brody going out and looking for these parcels.
So what happens when Jabali tells his boss about Brody? How does that go down? And what happens if he doesn't get the money? If he doesn't find it?
Well, again, his neck is on the line if he doesn't find
it. Yeah, I know.
He's in serious trouble. And his boss is a really evil, evil man. And he's like a king in Mombasa because he's taken over the town and he's taken over everywhere. The port, and he's taken over lots of areas. So he's like a high-style gangster, but he's a member of the government, so as a soldier, which makes him very, very dangerous. So Jabali's going to get in lots and lots of trouble, and he tells him straight that if he doesn't come up with the cash, then he's in deep trouble.
That is scary, and at that point, I'm surprised he didn't just say too bad, but... Yeah, he had a deal. So why not go to law enforcement? And who is Frost? Why don't they go to the police? They couldn't? But they wouldn't believe him?
Well, here the police are in the pocket of the Mbarizi.
That's what I thought.
Mbarizi runs the police.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kenya is still a country where we have quite a lot of corruption.
That's
so
scary.
It is scary. So Mbarizi controls the police, he controls the prison forces, he controls all of the local soldiers. So he's quite a person to be reckoned with. Now, Frost is an old friend of Brody's that they used to work together in Uganda many years ago when he was in the army. And they used to do humanitarian work there, him as the special forces, Brody in the special boat service. And Frost working for the United Nations. But unfortunately, Frost sees money on the other side of the street and leaves the United Nations and starts working for the people who are smuggling things out to the so-called freedom fighters of that time.
Well, who are the Ugandan freedom fighters? What about them?
Well, the one that I pick in the story is called Joseph Kony. He was a real man. He's still supposedly alive somewhere, but nobody knows where. He's still on the Interpol's most wanted list. And he started something called the Lord's Resistance Army. I called it something different. I called it the Christian Army because I didn't want to just plagiarize the story. But the actual Kony was... and still is, a man who was fighting Museveni, who's still the president of Uganda, trying to take over the country. But he was very brutal, and he had a lot of child soldiers, and he did a lot of terrible things in northern Uganda, which are still remembered today. Again,
well,
if you Google
Ukraine today, and it's not much different. It's horrible.
It's absolutely terrible. Yes, I'm shocked that these things can still happen. It's absolutely mind blowing, isn't it? What's happening in Ukraine?
What's really mind boggling is that the president of Russia actually thinks he's justified in doing it. That's what's even scarier. And what he's doing is so wrong. And those poor people, you know, every time somebody gets out, you pray for them seriously. By the time he gets
Absolutely.
Over, he decides what's going to happen to the country, there's not going to be any country left. It's destroyed. That's even worse. So
exactly.
Who
and
is
how's
Dave?
He going to rebuild it? If he
yeah.
Sorry.
You know what?
Dave is an old friend of Brody's from his soldier days,
yeah.
And he crops up every now and again when Dave is really stuck, when Brody's really stuck, and he needs some help. So he rings up Dave, his mate. In African Vengeance, we flash back to when they were on patrol in Uganda.
Yeah.
And Dave is like a sensible soldier You know, he's a sergeant. He's a bit below Brody in the ranks, but he's wiser in his years. And he tends to keep Brody on when Brody's a soldier into the straight and narrow, and not to do too many silly things. A good sergeant in the army.
Now, this scene really got me. Forget it, I would never do this. Then we meet Gabriel, Barry, and Gab, and they go into the caves, and they hear voices, and they see a ritual. Why and how would he want to be down there in the cave, and how would that solve the problem, but for who? How did you create that? It's
Gabriel,
like, oh, my God.
Gabriel is based on someone I met when I was in Somalia one time. Yeah. Africa, we have quite a lot of people like adventurers still and treasure hunters. And he's loosely based on a friend of mine. And he's always looking for ideas. He's always full of great ideas. And in this one, Gabriel had been researching the First World War trenches, and the Battle of the Bees and things like that, and been looking around. And he was fortunate enough to be offered to go and have a look at these Gamboni caves, where he has a look around, and there's an old story about Gamboni caves, which I've heard when I visited the caves, which was many years ago. Two Westerner explorers entered the caves and climbed inside the limestone caves, and they took their dog. And then like 3 weeks later, the dog was found, but the explorers were never, ever seen again. So Gabriel hears this story and it intrigues him, and he thinks, because he's a bit of an explorer, and he thinks he'll have a hunt around and see if he can get a TV documentary or maybe some sort of money from something to help do a project and have a look at the caves. Also, the caves are used by what we call Magangas, which are witch doctors. And Gabriel actually comes across a ritual going on and has to step in and try and help the person who's at the unfortunate brunt end of what the witch doctors want to happen. So he has quite an adventure. Inside Gamboni Caves, again, is a real place I visited and been inside the caves. It's a lovely place in Tanga. It's a really nice place to see. Nice tourist place.
That's why we need the pictures in the book. Before I forget.
Yeah.
Yep, on Wednesday, Lee Matthew Goldberg, Vanish Me. On the 31st, I'm doing something very different. Former FBI agent Michael Tabman and I are going to take on what's in the news. Anything that he wants to talk about that's in the news, including vaccinations and how people feel about it, we're going to talk about it, because why not? On the 4th, we have the author of Paradise Cove. On the 7th, we have something really, which is fit with this book. We're going to talk about settings of books and how some of the settings in the book lead to educational sites that people can learn from. I thought that would be different. And on the 14th, the author of Vices and Virtues. On the 19th, Charles Salzberg. On the 21st, One Will Too Many. And I'm very excited, on the 26th, New York Times author Jane Ann Krantz has asked for an interview with me. And that'll be a first. I'm really excited. So that's just some of what's coming up this month. Next month, you wouldn't believe. So who is Zeke? And why tell Zeke, and why was he with him, and who can he trust?
Zeke is the man from Zeke Frost. He's the same guy that they met in Uganda. So his backstory is a good guy that then saw the money and went bad. Now he's mixed up with Colonel Imbarizi, still doing the bad things that they were doing before, smuggling and whatever, to make money. So Zeke, once Brody has been forced into this chase to try and find the money, Zeke is teamed up with him by Colonel Imbarizi to make sure that Brody stays on the straight and narrow and does everything that Imbarizi wants him to do.
He's brave, let me tell you. So this is interesting. How did the photos and a simple news clip tell them about 1914 and the gold mine? Is that, was that a real event?
No, the gold mine is not a real event. But what it was, I've been to the museum in Tanga, which is a lovely museum. Mm-hmm. It's full of, it's like I depict in the book, it's full of old black and white photos and pictures of the times gone by. And I was in there walking around researching for this book and thinking about ways to introduce it, because I thought it was such a lovely building and such a lovely place. And the town as a whole, I thought was, you know, it's like a place a bit lost in time. You know, it's still a little bit old fashioned, and a lot of the older buildings are still there. So I used my imagination and I Googled some photographs, and I looked at the photographs on the walls in the museum, and sort of tied everything together as us authors are meant to do.
Well, let me tell you, this is like heart-stopping, especially that last scene that we'll get to later. So how did you connect the past and the present to bring the crates and the fire from the first part of the book to the present? And why did Johan have those photos and documents to start with? That was really cool, because I said, whoa, didn't that happen? Because I went back to the first part and said, wait a minute, that's just from the first and the second, first and third part. They sort of like connected them. How did you do that?
Well, I do a plan for a book once I get going. but I created my character, Johan, who runs the hotel in Tanga.
I liked him.
Which is still there. He's a nice guy, a very nice guy, yeah. a sort of descendant from the times when the colonial Germans ran the property. And him and his family sort of happened into getting hold of the hotel for free, but he's a history buff. And he loves all of the history about Tanzania and Tanganyika, when it was Tanganyika, and how it's developed. And he's a collector of all of the photographs and documents that he can find. And he has them posted on all of his walls in his hotel. Now, Gabriel, once Gabriel starts to get interested in the possibility of the crates and what happened and where it all came from and how he can find more of the crates. So he quizzes Johan, and then he starts digging through the books, and he starts digging through the photographs, and then he comes across, luckily, a few of the photographs which lead him to an idea of what might have happened. And this sort of develops as they continue the search. But basically, it's like a bit of research. They spend some time going through the records, going through the archives that Johan has collected over the years, and come up with a possibility of a plan.
This plan gave me claustrophobia. Forget if I was under the water like that. Forget that. Oh, my God. This was really like...
You're not a water fan.
No, you know, it's funny. I did learn to swim because I had no choice. And my mother said, you're going to learn. My mother said something that was like, forget it. You just did it. But then I had a bad experience in water, and I said, forget that. So I used to just put my feet in. No problem. But I was into
That's
sports
fair
and stuff like that. So forget about water. Basketball, volleyball, and kickball and all that stuff, that was me. So
That's great.
Explain,
sounds like my daughter's.
Yeah, I did actually, and I'm little. I'm only 5 feet tall. I weigh like nothing. But for some reason, I was really good at
basketball.
Girls' basketball, and I was able to get 3-pointers. I don't know how I did it, but I did. And it was fun. It was
a lot of fun. Yeah.
That's what I
did,
too. Yeah. So explain how they worked in the water and under the sub and the dangers. How did the rocks they found help with the gold and the wire processing plant?
They used what's called rebreathers, which is a special scuba diving equipment which allows you to spend a lot longer underwater and at greater depths. Mm. Now, Brody is from the Special Boat Service, so he's a very highly trained diver who works in the water and on boats all the time. So they were able to get this dive equipment because Tanga is being used for a lot of oil exploration, oil and gas exploration, so they were able to get hold of the equipment. Now, they we're in a lot of danger because underneath the water at those depths, you can only stay off for a very short period of time. It's only a maximum of about 15 or 20 minutes, depending on the depth,
wow.
or you get nitrogen narcosis and you can die. But Brody has to get some things done and get some wires in place, and he has to push his limits to the absolute maximum. So he puts himself into a lot of danger to actually finalize this. And he has to do all this because he's very worried that Wanjiku and Hassan are going to be killed and lost, and so he's under a lot of pressure. So it's always in the back of his head that he's got to try and save his friends. So he pushes the limits, which is very, very dangerous with diving, and almost kills himself.
Well, we can't have that because he's a character in this book, and I take it there's going to be more. He's not done yet.
Yeah,
I figured
he's in
that
the next one, yeah, so he has to.
That's what I figured. Why were they betrayed so often? I know. And how was gold processed? So I'm not going to tell anybody if they found it, but I was like getting, oh, my God, are they going to ever get that stuff out of there? Is it going to be there forever? What are they going to do with it? It was very clever. So what happens to Hassan and Wanjiku, the girl, and how would they be betrayed every single time they try to do something?
I know. It's terrible, isn't it? I had to keep them being betrayed.
I want to smack a few heads. Really?
Brody in this one is, I wanted to bring out me power in this one. I really wanted Wanjiku and the ladies to be strong female characters. I fell in love with Wanjiku when she started doing her things and standing up for herself, and I wanted to carry that forward. So to do that, I made Brody make a few mistakes that he shouldn't have made. And that's why they get in so much trouble, because Brody keeps doing things and he's not doing them very well. But the reason I push that forward is because I want Wanjiku to do very well. And she comes out as in my opinion, as the hero, or one of the big heroes of the plot.
Well, I just noticed the book is in front of me, it doesn't want to leave me, that I have the first chapter of the next book, right? Is that in there? It's in the back?
No, it isn't, because I hadn't written it by then. I'm writing it now.
I know. It's weird. It's an African.
It
must be African treasure. It must be something that came first, because it's definitely in this book. That's because I read all of it.
Yes.
That just proves people I read. So, how did you create the final confrontations, and who is Tabitha?
The final confrontations were very difficult because I didn't want the book to finish as I thought it would, because I was thinking about my reader, and I wanted to give them a bit of a surprise at the end, because my initial ending was they drive the boat back to Motuapa and they go and confront Colonel Mbrizi in the prison, which is set in the earlier part of the book. But then I didn't want to do that because I felt that was like expected. So I had to bring everyone together. So I had to get Hassan and Wanjiku all the way down to Tanga, which was quite an enjoyable chapter to write. And they have some full-on adventures and do some fantastic stuff. And Wanjiku really starts coming together and coming out of it herself. And I had to get her into Tanga, and I had to get Colonel Mbrizi to Tanga as well. So he just gets very frustrated, and he has to make a decision to go and get Brody and get everything and sort the problem out, because he needs to get the gold quick. But he's leaving the country, so he's putting himself in a very weak position, because he's very, very strong in Kenya. But if he crosses the border, he's very, very weak. Now, Tabitha was a lovely lady I created to be the boss of the processing plant. Now, she's a very strong white lady living in Africa, and there's some very strong ladies here. And she runs the processing plant with her father. But her and Gabriel sort of have a little bit of a, they look at each other and see similar characters and a spark there. So she likes Gabriel, because he is a bit of a ladies' man. but she takes a liking to him. That's why she sort of comes in the end and wants to help them save the day.
So what happens if let's say for argument's sake, we're not going to say what they do, and they get the money and they get all the gold and whatever, who gets it?
Well, the gold is, without spoiling it, the gold ends up in the right hands. Let's say that. Yeah, Brody never wants to get rich. Brody just wants a peaceful life, living on the ocean, fishing, diving, eating his fish, drinking coconuts. That's what Brody wants. He never does any of this to get rich. But the money, at the end of the story, the money seems to manage in a twisted roundabout way to find its way to the right places. I hope, anyway. That's how I wrote it.
Well, I'm not going to say what. But what happens to Brody? Does he get hurt at the end?
Brody gets pretty beaten up, during his
life.
But Colonel Lombrisi gets worse.
That's really sad. But that's sad. So who is Maria? She's at the end also.
Maria? That wasn't on your list.
She's like in the last chapter. Yeah.
That's a different book.
Okay, that doesn't help.
That's a chapter for African Treasure.
So what's next for Brody? What's he going to be into next?
Brody and me are on a new adventure at the moment. Mm. We're about halfway through our next adventure, where he's up on the Somali border, enjoying life as usual, fishing, diving, sailing, scuba diving, and messing around. But now Hassan has got some problems at home on Pemba Island.
Mm.
And so Brody gets dragged in once again to try and help out with the next problem. I'm not sure what the book is going to be called. I've got a working title of African Maganga.
Oh, nice.
Which is an African witch doctor. But I write blogs every month, and I try to keep my readers up to date by giving them a small excerpt, or where I am in the book, or how difficult the book is to write at the moment. You know how authors have crunches.
We have
writer's block, and we don't know which way the story's going, and then suddenly the door opens and off we go, and we're able to write 2,000-3,000 words without putting our heads up. So he's still alive and well, and he's still enjoying the dream.
I wish I could do that too.
He'll come back
and he won't put too many pieces.
This one, he'll get in trouble, but he always survives. He's a tough lad.
Well, he has to, because obviously he's going to be in a lot more than just this, right? So in the next one, who are you bringing back besides, of course, Brody? Who else is Ben Hassan? And she's got to come back. And Tabitha has got to come back. So who else is coming back?
Well, I'm going to try. I may
leave
Tabitha and Gabriel out of the next book and bring him in the one after. But Hassan and Gumbawa in this. And also we're going back to Pemba Island. So we have some nice characters from the second book called African Treasure, which I left on Pemba Island, which I'll bring back into this book. Which will be great to see them again, and then they'll head off and have some adventures with Brody.
So are you going to do another tour with Partners in Crime? Because they're the ones that keep me extremely busy. If you looked at my desk, I have another 45 interviews coming from them just alone. Forget about everybody
else.
I never thought when I retired from teaching, which I'm a reading and writing specialist, and I loved it, every minute of it, that I would become an author and an interviewer or whatever. But my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, so I had to retire and make sure that she got proper home care, which she did. You don't put your mother in a home. You take care of her and make sure everybody else does. So I love doing this. This is so much fun. It makes me feel like I'm doing something positive in the world, I hope. So where can everybody get all of your books and learn more about you?
My books can be found on my website, which is stevebreakerbooks.com. I'm also on Facebook under African Ocean Adventures.
Mm.
I'm also on Instagram under African Ocean Adventures. And you can find me on Amazon. Just type in Steve Breaker or African Vengeance, and I will pop up.
Well, you have to friend me on Facebook. I'm there. I think, yeah, I'm there.
I will, definitely.
Definitely. This way I can tell people what you're doing, and I can tell everybody that, you know, they should read your work. Seriously, because I'm glad I read this book, and then I said, this is really what put in a lot of information about Africa and Kenya that I didn't know. So I'm learning a lot, too. That's why I love doing this. But what time is it there, by the way?
It's 6 o'clock in the evening here. Early morning for you, but 6 o'clock in the evening for me.
It's 11 o'clock here almost. That's okay, 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
I have no idea where anybody is, and there was once where I did, poor guy was at 2 o'clock in the morning. I had no idea. But seriously, Steve, stay in touch, stay safe, and just be careful there. Seriously.
I will be. I've been here for 20 years, so I know a lot to do now.
And thank you for doing this. This has really been a lot of fun. I enjoyed myself, and I hope that you enjoyed the interview too. Everybody have a great day, and bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.